Hello, thank you for listening to episode 16 of 60 Minutes With. I'm Dave, and in this episode I'm joined by a man who on screen is one of the baddest bad guys that you've ever seen, and yet off screen he's been a minister for over 30 years. We get to chat martial arts, we bring up Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, Jim Kelly, we talk about the stunt work that he's done, we talk about sports, American football, the Pittsburgh Pirates, yes, there's going to be some talk about Pittsburgh sport in there. We also get to talk about the fantastic work that he does as a minister in prisons and on Skid Row as well. We pack so much into the 60 Minutes With, and it was truly an honour to have a chat with this man, as I'm sure you'll agree when you listen to it. So please sit back, relax, get comfortable, and enjoy 60 Minutes with Mel Novak. Right, Mel, the first thing, again, with a guest, I've got to thank you for giving your time. I'm always very grateful for anybody that gives me the time to chat with me.
Oh, my pleasure, yes.
And we were chatting, weren't we, just before we started the recording. I mean, listeners know of my love of Pittsburgh. I've been a Pittsburgh Steelers fan for 32 years now, I think. And, of course, you were born in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Steeler Nation.
Oh, that's so good to hear, Steeler Nation. Let's hope to go a bit further this coming season, too.
I know. I was sick when they lost that, because I don't like Baltimore at all.
Oh, no, they're deadly rivals, aren't they?
Yeah.
And, of course, your affiliation with Pittsburgh as well. You played for the Pirates, the baseball team.
Yeah, I was signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates organization, and that was probably my first big disaster. I never got hurt in football. I had 60 scholarships all over the country, major universities. I had an appointment to Annapolis, and I played offense and defense and never got hurt. So I end up signing a pro baseball contract, and a year and a half later, I had a massive rotator cuff tear, and when they operated, they butchered me. I mean, I was a cripple for 5 years.
Wow, that's terrible.
I went from what they called a world-class athlete to a cripple, and that was brutal. Scholarships gone, everything's gone, and I'm literally a gimp with that shoulder and that arm and everything. I went from 188 pounds to 158. They had a 27-pound cast, body cast, and it was with all the stress and trauma and not understanding about spiritual warfare then, it was very difficult. But, you know, the good thing was that I never did drugs. I never did alcohol. Mm-hmm. Normally, when a young kid's life is a disaster, they'll medicate, escape, and do whatever it takes to walk from this pain. And that was something, because I deal with people with drug addiction and alcoholism, and so I'm grateful. Got his hand on me, and it wasn't easy.
It's been good, though, because you've stayed focused all the way through your career, through a number of things that we're going to touch on. Let's start with the martial arts. When and how did you get into martial arts?
Well, actually, when I came to California, I never did anything in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And when I came to California, I just I had to get away from Pittsburgh. Everybody would keep me reminding you should have done this, you should have gone to college, and you know, that gets old.
Yeah.
So I came to California, and I was working in an insurance company, and that's where my career started. As a gal says, I have a cousin that's a modeling agent, would you like to meet her? Sure. So I started modeling, and then went to acting schools, and the first movie I did with martial arts was Black Belt Jones. And before I did that, I was learning some martial arts. Pat Johnson, who was a great stunt coordinator, and he taught Steve McQueen in karate. Steve was his student. So that's where I started, and I had a lot of different people that I was like a mongrel. you learn a little bit from this, a little bit from that. And then Black Belt Jones, which was a big money maker that year, I played a hitman named Blue Eyes. And I did my – Robert Klaus was a director.
Oh, yeah.
And as
yeah.
I was doing my my fight, I always hung out with the stuntmen and the guys that, you know, do a lot of the stuff. That's how I learned. So he left that fight in at the car wash with all his suds. He left everything. I was the only one that he did it in slow motion. He said it was so real. and that came back to my athletic. You know, I learned how to, you know, take fight, the fight scenes and use them. And then I was a villain there. So, you know, the great thing that happened there was that he took me to Hong Kong to do the Game of Death, Bruce Lee's last picture.
Yeah.
And so that was like awesome. You know, you get I was over in Hong Kong 7 weeks, but it all started with you know, the big part was the big movie was Black Belt Jones, and Warner Brothers distributed. So it was from there, and then you know, in Game of Death, I was working out for 2 weeks with these world karate champs and getting my butt kicked. And then a week before the big scenes, Robert Klaus says, "You know what? I don't want you to do the karate. I want you to be like a street fighter with this." I said, "You know, thanks a lot, Bob. You told me that before I got whooped over there." But that really, it's like everybody I ever met had seen that picture in the prisons, wherever you go. And that's where it really all started with martial arts. I've been to London Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and I was just in Atlantic City in January, which was really cold. I got really a nice honor martial arts, really beautiful plaque. Alan Goldberg runs that, and he's like a Rolls Royce of those martial arts epics. And I've done probably about 12, 14 other ones, you know, films and martial arts. And, you know, playing a villain, you always make the other person look good. I've died a lot of times in a movie, so.
Yeah, you have died a lot of times in the movies, haven't you? Loads of times.
Yeah.
And you also got inducted into the Martial Arts Hall of Fame in London, too, a few years back as well, didn't you?
Yes. That's what I was mentioning. In fact,
yeah.
I'm sitting in my office den right now, and it's right up there. It's really nice, you know, pretty big, what would you call it? It's like a big bowl there, and with a karate guy on top. It's very nice. And there's other things too, but, you know, I just tell them thank you very much. I'm honored. God bless you. And just go on.
But that was like a golden age, though, for martial arts films back in that time in the 70s, wasn't it? You know, with Bruce Lee, and of course you worked with Jim Kelly in Black Belt Jones. I know somebody else who was brilliant as well. And then you've got, you know, like the likes of Steve McQueen, because I'm sure everybody that's familiar with Bruce Lee has seen all the photographs. Because Bruce Lee himself, he trained lots of people, didn't he?
Celebrities, he did, yeah. Too. There'll never be another one like him. I mean, he was just incredible. And his son, too. I knew his son because 10 years after Bruce passed, up at Columbia Studios, they had a big remembrance of him. And his wife, Linda, was there, and the son and daughter. And I think Shannon was 15, and I forget how – I think his sister was 13. And how he died was like when I shot – Bruce in the Game of Death, you know, he was doing the throw. So tragic, a lot of tragedy there, and really sad because, you know, everybody tries to emulate Bruce, but they just can't and they won't.
No.
It'll never. No. And I work with Joe Lewis. He passed away. He had brain cancer. Jim Kelly passed away. He had, I think, stomach cancer. So, you know, you take care of your body when you're young. It'll take care of you later. But you start screwing around with drugs, it's going to eat you up.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, it is.
Just, I see so much of that. And you see people in the, you know, I'm not going to give a name, but there's an actor I know that, brilliant actor, great, done some great movies, got millions, but he's an alcoholic, drug addict, and he's suicidal. And when he wants the peace that I have, but he doesn't want the Prince of Peace that gives it. So I told him, well, you know, this is going to happen to you if you commit suicide. So now he's afraid. I told him about Hades and the Lake of Fire. So at least that's one part. But it's just tragic that when you have everything imaginable and it's still not enough. Like when I go into a federal prison, you see these people who were doctors, lawyers, surgeons, and these three multimillionaires in Texas in this federal prison, these are old guys. And I said, help me to understand why you would even do something to jeopardize your freedom. The G word, greed. Mm-hmm. Well, now you're here. Someone else is going to spend your money. What does it take to satisfy your soul? But, you know, like you said, focus. You know, I have other things in life that I do. And like in 2014, I really had no big starring roles, nothing. So I did 268 services in Skid Row and prisons. And that this year already, you know, I work with Gregory, whom you know, and then I'm Leo Fong, who's a classic martial artist. He taught Bruce Lee too, Leo.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, I'm doing a movie with him right now called Runaway Killers. And we have, I think, a couple of days, we got that big epic ending, which is good. So I get to shoot a couple of people. So that's fun. And actually, we got, I think, in Samurai Cop 2 Deadly Vengeance, I think you got a day or two pickup because I got this one huge scene I'm really chomping at the bit to do. And then in April, I think 17th, I start Syndicate Smasher. And my title, my name's above the title. And it's a really an action adventure.
Wow, this is
Benny Jahanga is the director. And then there's two pictures in June. I have I don't know which one I'm thinking about doing. And then Gregory Hatanaka is doing another one in November he wants me to do. So all at once, like, everything is amazingly opening up. And I'm not even following or pursuing.
This is it. I mean, cause it sounds like you've got an incredibly busy year.
Yes, very. And see what keeps me going. Like one day I was working on Runaway Killers, and the next day I was down to Skid Row ministering, and then the day after that I had a shooting, and the day after that I was down at LA County Jail, which is the worst jail in the country, the whole country. Used to be Cook County, Chicago for 20 years, but the biggest jail in the world. I think it's like about 19 or 21,000 at three different facilities.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We, in our country, we have more people incarcerated than probably some 12, 15 countries put together.
Whoa.
And you know the big bugaboo is the drugs. Just there's some drugs I don't even know their names. Someone tells me, I say, whoa, where did that come from? And then the ones that, and crystal meth is real big in our country. And now the choice of drugs for the young people, the teenagers and whatnot, is heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And heroin is brutal. And it's always choices. David, there's choices in life, choices and choices. So it's kind of funny. You know, you work in doing a movie with a great role, and the next day you go to Skid Row.
I mean, let's say, I mean, you've said luckily you've stayed away from all of that, but there must, within like the Hollywood system, and you've been in so many films over the years, there must be so much temptation for people within that system
Oh, yeah,
constantly.
it is. But see, it's the old pride and ego thing. I can handle it. No, you can't. It's like that, I think it's that crystal meth they told me. You take it one time, it's like the greatest orgasm you ever had. And then from there on, you're chasing it. You never get it. But it's very, very, very addictive. And I've known people after a year or two, their teeth, some teeth fall out, their skin, I mean, it's poison. It is poison. And oh, I've been to parties in Hollywood where they had bowlfuls of cocaine. I said, no, thank you.
Yeah, I think with
My actually, when I came out here, my drug was women. So, boy, but again, we talk about life is short. What am I going to do with my life? Do I want to take a chance? See, people take a chance, and in LA County Jail, there's some really good actors that ended up there with drugs.
Yeah, of course.
I went, and they were like in a lockdown where people couldn't get in, but the watch commander, and I got favor with them, and they let me go in and administer to them. Robert Downey Jr., he didn't want any, he didn't want to see any chaplain, so that's okay. Again, it's a choice.
Yeah. But like, so you
Boy.
again, but over the years, with while we're on the subject of actors as well, you've worked with so many. Do any spring to mind? Which ones have you had the best time with? I know you got quite friendly with Steve McQueen as well,
Yeah,
didn't you?
I love Steve. He was, see, he really liked me because, he spent some time in, was in the juvenile facility, and he knew what I did, and that, see, he didn't like the Hollywood type people with all the, the pride and ego thing. They think they're hot, and he was like a rebel in that, in the industry, but he was great. I worked with, in the Game of Death, Gig Young. He had won an Academy Award, and just a lot of good, nice people.
Wasn't it Steve McQueen as well that pulled you into, weren't you pulled into Tom Horn at the last minute as
Yeah,
well?
he wanted me to play the sheriff, which is really a good role, but the director did a movie with this, I think his name was Bush, Billy Green Bush. And he insisted on him doing the sheriff. So, and Steve says, "Okay, I'm sorry, that won't work." And about 4 weeks later, if I get a call from Fred Weintraub, and they're filming down in Arizona, and he said, "Steve just fired three actors," and he said, "Go call Mel." He said, "They couldn't handle the dialogue." I says, "And it was 3 in the afternoon." He says, "Your plane leaves at 6." I saw him, man. Well, what am I going to get the dialogue? So he says, "Well, when you get here." When I got there, it wasn't there. So the next morning, it takes an hour to go to the old Tucson Western set, and I'm really, really working, memorizing, and now we're in wardrobe, and this guy comes in and says, "Where's Mel Novak?" I said, "Here I am." He said, "Steve and the director want you to do the other role, the one with the dialogue, all the dialogue, and hurry up, we're ready to start shooting." I mean, I thought, are you kidding me? So now we're in a street, in that Western street, and we got the script in our hand, and we're doing it. And John Alonzo, who was the cinematographer, he said to me, he says, "That's great what you're doing." He says, "That's exactly what Steve wants for." I said, "John, they just gave this to me. I haven't even had a chance to work on it." He says, "You better hope that we do a lunch because we're ready to go and shoot." And I'm going, "Oh, Lord." And so I prayed. And sure enough, we're ready. We're sitting in our around that table where we're going to do it. And someone says, You know what? Why don't we just go take do our lunch and then we'll start fresh when we come back. Man, I made a beeline from my dressing room, and it worked out. And he told me that whatever he does after that, I will have a good role. But he passed away. The last one he did was The Hunter. And I went to him. I was supposed to go to Germany, London, to do a movie, which I had a lead. And he said, "Oh, you got to take that." And he said, "We'll have other stuff." But unfortunately, he passed. I used to minister to him, and he had a cough that was horrible. You know, cancer is an ugly animal. Mm-hmm. And God healed me from prostate cancer. And it took 7 years, but I didn't have him take it out. I wouldn't do chemo, none of that stuff. Because I heard the Lord say, "Trust me." And that was another miracle. I've had a lot of miracles in my life. And that's why I don't take one day for granted.
Mm, yeah.
Then you have, you know, you can go and work on a film and, you know, have fun. And then you go down to the war zone.
It's great though that you're still mixing both of these up. You're still doing two of the things that you've got, you know, that you've got this passion for. It's so good that you're mixing between both of these, and obviously as movie fans, that you're back in the game as well, and you're making movies again, and we can see you back on screen.
That's fine. Then I like to play, you know, in real life. I'm not like I do in the movies. I mean, I've never shot and killed 10 people in real life, but in the movies I do that. And I go tell it sometimes. I'll be working on a real heavy scene, and then next day or two I'm down in the prison. I says, "Yo, bro, I just shot 3 people, but see, I went home, took my makeup off, because I use blanks. You guys use the real stuff, and here you are."
Mm-hmm.
So you funny, brother Mel.
That's the difference, isn't it? Like, you're right there.
Yeah, it's I think it was last night, must have been midnight, I heard 2 gunshots. This was it had to be a big gun because it was loud. You got people that just mean-spirited people.
It's crazy though, because it's, you know, we obviously over here in the UK we see it on the news all the time, but speaking personally, you know, from myself who lives in the hills in Wales, it seems like a totally different world, especially, you know, in LA as well. You know, you're talking about like gunshots at night and everything.
It's just like, it's like this one inmate was ragging on God. I said, whoa, what are you talking about? God didn't buy that gun. He didn't buy the bullets. He didn't load it. He didn't tell you to sneak up on another gangbanger and shoot him when he wasn't looking. Why are you coming down on God? That's on you, Holmes. Just what I told him. But this is, you know, it's amazing to me that somebody, I've known people, like an inmate in Florida had 999 years and 99-day sentence. I've been to Pelican Bay, which is the worst penitentiary in the country. If you ever, I don't know if you have lockup, mm-hmm. you know, where you are, but the other night they had Pelican Bay, San Quentin, and LA County Jail. And I've been to all 3 of those places. But I've been to Pelican Bay, and 83% of lifers will never, ever get out.
Wow.
Never get out. But, this is why, you know, just the freedom to do whatever, to give that up and jeopardize it is like beyond me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you need to enjoy life without doing any of the bad side of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, life is tough, and where I deal people with brokenness, broken people walking wounded everywhere you go, David. And, you know, I don't care who you are, you're going to go through a hard time in your life. And how are you going to deal with it? See, a lot of people I know personally, they dealt with it by turning to drugs, and now they're in a world of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the penitentiaries, you know, you got $200,000-$300,000 inside. I mean, they're drug dealing inside.
Wow, that's crazy.
I mean, it's amazing, yeah. And they make this Pruno. It's called Pruno. They get fruit and it ferments. They get sugar, put water in there, and they sleep in the bag of it where it gets warm. And this one inmate told me it tastes terrible, but you get drunk as a skunk.
Oh,
yeah, amazing.
It is,
absolutely
isn't it?
Amazing. One inmate swallowed 5 balloonfuls of drugs, cocaine, heroin. And what he didn't realize, he had an acidy stomach.
Oh, no.
One of them broke. He died so fast, you just couldn't even imagine.
Oh, that's awful.
And one day, this the county jail, you had a whole bunch of these young gangbangers, you know, 18, 19 years old. So I have my flyer that shows the movies I've done, and like I think there's like eight or nine pictures there of different movies and my testimony. And so this one gangbanger says, "Hey, Chaplin, did you do all these movies?" I says, "Yeah." He goes, "You know karate, huh?" And then I go real loud, "Yes, I do, and I'll use it if I have to."
We had
stabbings. We had stabbings inside the church service.
Inside the church service?
We had two stabbings in 12 days last year in the church service. And I had a service 3 days after that. And I told them, I said, "I got really an encouraging message for you. I want you to listen. And I know you all heard about the stabbings. I just want you to know, and if you come in with a shank, I'm going to take your eye out, then I'm going to repent." You didn't hear a pin drop. It's just amazing about the, you know, the one guy says, I want respect. I said, you can't demand respect. You got to command it as how you treat people. But that's a big thing. You know, up in Pelican Bay, I go up there every September, and it cost me like $1,000 for that trip. Mm-hmm. And this one inmate was in a hole. It's called the SHU, Secure Housing Unit. They put him in there because he was in a Mexican mafia, and and he wanted out. He didn't want to do that anymore. He gave his life to Christ, and so they stabbed him 16 times.
Oh no!
And he didn't die, but he's in that shoe for protection. But you're locked down 23 hours a day. You get 1 hour out of 24 hours, and that's a tough one right there.
Oh yeah, that's got to be. I mean, all you get is it's just 1 hour every day.
I watched those guys like a hawk, so I could, you know, as I play a lot of villains, so I like to get different ideas of how some of them walk or they talk or little different habits, what they do, and so I'm always on the lookout.
That's good, Bimmy, because you're renowned for playing the bad guys, and
yeah,
you play a good bad guy, you know, really great bad guy. What's the? It must be fun playing the bad guy in films.
Oh, it is. It's like in Syndicate Smasher. You know, I'm a mercenary, and I have a team of three, a gal and two guys, and two of them were captured by these Russians. And here I come in with one of the other ones in his vehicle, and I got a 50 caliber. Boom, 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 and I'm blowing all those Russians away. And then the mafia and the Yakuza, they try to stiff me on a deal. So now they want to kill me. So I do a lot of killing in that one.
What's the favorite part that you've played? Have you got a particular one that stands out?
I really liked the Game of Death because I had that character locked. They had a... From the States, they had a guy that was helping everybody with their characterization and everything. And after a day of shooting, he came to me and said, "I don't have anything to say to you." He said, "You got that thing locked more than anyone I've ever seen." So that one I liked. I liked Sword of Heaven. I played an assassin, and I had to learn to sword fight. For the end, and in fact, the guy that was teaching, he taught Errol Flynn and Basil Rathbone in that one big fight they had. So that was fun to do that. And then I got my head cut off on that one. But that was, I had a really good role, and I wouldn't take it because this character used God's name in vain all through the picture. And so they looked at every villain in Hollywood, and finally they Joseph Randazzo, a producer, says, "The part's yours, take it home, see if you want to do it." And I came back and said, "I'd love to do it, but I don't use God's name in vain. I had 10 throat surgeries in 10 years, so I'm just blessed that I could even talk." He says, "Wait a minute, you're going to kill 7 people and you don't want to use God's name in vain?" I said, you got it. He says, "You mean you won't take the role?" "No, I can't do that." And so he said, "All right, just a minute." They went in the other room with the director, executive producer, and he came out and he says, "Okay." But, it, you know, he asked me later to pray for his mom, and I led the wardrobe girl to the Lord and some other people. And it's always a choice. And I refuse. I raised my 2 daughters. I wouldn't do nudity. I wouldn't do anything to bear, you know, to embarrass them. Mm-hmm. And I've lost roles, but that would, you know, everybody has a choice.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, you may have lost those roles, but, you know, you've kept your peace of mind.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I wasn't like that. This guy, it was like a delicious gangster. And I got the part, and I told that producer, you know, "I don't use God's name in vain." And I told him, you know, I'm a Christian, and I had surgery in my throat 10 times in 10 years. And so I went down to pick out my script, and he said, "Oh, we added this scene, and you're going to do a scene in a hot tub naked with this girl over there." She was a 12, not a 10, gorgeous. I said, "I'm not going to do that. You know, my daughters are in high school, and I don't want them embarrassed." "Well, we saw your dad naked." I said, "I'm not doing that." Mm-hmm. "And I told you, I'm not using God's name in vain. There's no need to be MFing and everybody else on top of it. Everybody's afraid of this guy." By the time I got home, the phone rang. "Oh, Mel, we're so sorry. There's a change in casting." And, you know, David, for a moment there, I was going to go back down and just play Star Spangled Banner on that producer's head. But I didn't. And the picture tanked anyway, never even got released.
Oh, whoa.
So, but these are things that happen in a business. And you got a lot of promises that are broken. But the thing is, a lot of people, when that happens to them, they crash.
Yeah.
So all I got to do is go to Skid Row, and all you see is people homeless, addicted, afflicted. It is horrible. We got one of the worst Skid Rows in the world. You got thousands of people.
Is there any sign of it getting better? Can you see any sort of future? Is it just going to get worse? Yeah.
Worse. Population tripled last year.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main things, isn't it?
You know, people losing their jobs, losing this, losing that, and then, I mean, you got, I remember this lawyer, he lost his practice, his marriage, his fortune, everything, and he ends up on Skid Row.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because people, you know, automatically assume when they see people on Skid Row that for some reason, you know, they've always been there. They don't think that they could have fallen from the top. They could have had this wealth and everything else and then end up on the streets.
There's a lady that's, she used to be a judge in a courtroom. She's been down there 16, 17 years. I've known her. She's demon possessed. I have a captive audience because they have to listen before they eat. And I use a lot of scriptures. I mean, I'll use 100 scriptures in every message. That demon manifests and it starts screaming like a banshee monkey. But here's someone who is a judge, and she's absolutely filthy dirty, and she's probably 60 years old now, and she's been raped I don't know how many times, and it's just amazing. You know, people need to know that, you know, we have an enemy called the devil, and it's a battle, it's a war every day. That's why they start, "Oh, I could handle this," and before you know, they're addicted. Heroin. heroin is brutal. I had this guy who was in prison who knew me, and when he got out, I do a radio show called Omega Man. I've done probably 52 of those, and it's like 2 hours. We did like 4 hours the other night about spiritual warfare and whatnot. And so the guy came to my Bible study, which is 80 miles, and he brought these three young kids who were into rehab. This girl was 16 years old, and she was a heroin addict. I mean, that blows me away.
Yeah, getting to it so early.
Gee, my goodness. And, you know, I took my daughters, and you know, their mother left us a long time ago, and when they were 8 and 11, 9 and 12, I took them to Skid Row with me. I just told them, look, you know I never drank the drugs, but this could happen to you. Because when you go to high school, you're going to be tempted. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, all their friends got on cocaine, and they didn't. And they used to ask my daughter, Leah, well, why? She says, my dad took me to Skid Row, and I don't even want to think about that.
So, yeah, that's the way to do it, definitely.
But, I really enjoy working in films and playing people that's the opposite of me. You know, in The Runaway Killer, I had this long monologue, 2-page monologue, but then it became emotional. I was able to cry, and then we did it again and again, and they're like making bets, can't do it again. I did it 7 times in a row with different angles, close up, medium close, and the 8th time, it dried up.
Not surprised.
But, you know, even to do it more than 2 times.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I've got to say, when obviously I'm very familiar with your work, and this one film I've just got to ask about you, because this was one of my, and still is, favourite films. But I remember the first time that I watched it, I must have been like in my early teens, and I saw it on the television, and I've watched it so many times since. I really love this film, and I'd love for you to tell any stories that you can from being in The Ultimate Warrior.
Oh yes, Yul Brynner. Mm-hmm. I really, really liked him, and we worked well together. And you know, I mess around on the set. I throw my voice. And, it, you know, people, they think it's like, just a minute, Mel, someone's calling me. Run over there. I said, what do you want? I didn't call you. Anyway, I got Yul Brynner 3 days in a row. and all I'm standing by him, and I threw my voice, and he goes into a King and I stance. And he says, okay, I know you're in that dressing room. And when you come out, you're off this picture. You're fired. So I said, well, what happened? Someone's been calling me in hiding for 3 days, and now he's in there. And I knew nobody was in there because I did it. So I said, you want me to go look? He says, yeah, I went in. And I said, there's nobody there. And he just, his face is red. He walked. I never called him again either. But we had I did the second toughest stunt in the whole movie. And how it happened was I'm playing the one character, the tracker, and you had this other stuntman was supposed to do, but the director says he looks too angelic, so they fired him. And he said to me, I'm going to enhance your part so you can do him. Can you do that stunt? I go, oh, yeah. And the stunt coordinator goes, Mel, do you know what you got to do? Yeah, I got to fall. I'm 6'2". I said, I fall 6 feet. No, you don't. You fall 12 feet 2 inches from your head. And then there's a 2x2 foot balsa wood square. Here's the pebble. It's like in his old train station there. And it's all sand. He says, you're going to fall in head first. And at the last second, turn to your left. And you got a lit torch. And then you go down another six feet. And that's all concrete wall. So I immediately says, Lord, Lord, I shouldn't have said yes. And so we did it. We did a you know, you have like the bubble there, and well, let's just try it without the torch being lit. So I did it, and he says, "Where's the torch, Mel?" It's right between my legs, all the way home, and I'm going, "Torcha, torcha, torcha." So the next day, they got three cameras going, and it's a very, very difficult intel scene, and this is where I finally confront him. And I got the knife in one hand and a sword, and I'm quick as an athlete. And Yul Brynner is like one, two, three, one, going backwards. So the two producers, Weintraub and Heller, they were on Klaus because he was getting behind schedule. So he came over to me and said, "Don't F this up, Mel." I said, "Thanks a lot. I didn't need to hear that." So as soon as we did the first one, I mean, I could have burned Yul Brynner's chin in a minute, but you know, you burn him, but I get fired. So I had to, and Klaus says, "Come on, Mel, doesn't look like you won him." And Yul Brynner says, "Yeah, come on." I said, "Can we do it right away again?" And I did. I went after his chin. He wasn't doing one, two, three. He was stepping back real fast. God, Brent, that's what I wanted. And then when I did the, after he stabbed me, and I go head first, I mean, it was amazing. Like, God really protected me on that one. And now I'm down there, in that way down underneath of that 6 feet from it, and they're all clapping, and Yul Brynner's going, "Bravo, bravo." So, and then that's when they put those 40 live rats on me. I had sunflower seeds and peanut butter. It looked like they were eating it. And like my head was like to where. So I held my breath for like a minute and a half. And all at once, this big rat started going up my arm. And I thought, he comes close to my face, I'm going to screw this shot up. I don't care. And so the camera could see the one side. So on my other side, I went. So he skittered off. But that was, I really enjoyed that, working with him and Max von Sydow.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yo, Max, yeah. First question I ask him, "How did you prepare when you played Jesus?" I mean, I had him cornered there. But, you know, that picture should have been really a big hit. For some reason, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was distributed properly, because Yul Brynner was wonderful in there, as was Max von Sydow, William Smith, Joanna Miles. I mean, it was really, really good. Remember when I'm walking there, and then one of the guys was up against, he's hanging on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
As I walk by, nobody could see on camera. He's going, "Help me, help me." Like in The Fly, when the spider's coming after the fly. Remember the movie The Fly?
Oh, yeah.
And so Klaus says, "Okay, Mel, that was really good, but it looked like you're almost ready to smile, so let's do it once more." So as I walk back, I said to the guy, I stopped, and I says, "You do that once more, I'm going to break your arm." He didn't do it anymore. Oh, but I grew good memories in that. They made me an honorary stuntman, Stuntman's Association.
And you've done a lot of stunts too.
Yeah, yeah. That in Sword of Heaven, I did the, you know, the director was late on a set, which I couldn't believe, and we got this big scene I got to do. So I worked it out with Lou Casamassa. He had his Karate Kids there, and where I was throwing these guys around, flipping them over, and it really, the scene worked out well. And when I showed the director what we were going to do, he said, "Oh, that's great, you bailed me out." I said, "Don't ever do that again." I said, "That's very unprofessional. This is my butt up on that screen, and you can't just not do this." Then his girlfriend, who was a casting director, she was playing one of the people that I kill with a garrote. So the line was just this terrible line. "Should have paid out, rich bitch. Might have been nice." So I said, "I don't want to do that." He says, "That's gauche." "Well, what do you want to do?" I says, I want to stroke her cheek and then kiss her and say, should have paid up, it might have been nice. He said, Mel, she's dead. I said, think about my character. He doesn't have one oar in the water. But then when I went to, you know, now we're rehearsing, I told her, now you're dead, don't respond. I kissed her and she's like almost swallowing me, kissing. I said, don't do that. You're going to screw this shot up. So we did it again and she put her tongue in my mouth. I says, you do that again, I'm going to bite it. Don't you do this. This is, be a professional. And the director of boyfriends, he's going, what's going on? What's going on? I said, see? And then she said, can I babysit for you? No. your boyfriend, the director, is editing, and I don't want to get edited out. So no thank you. But she screwed the shot up. And she's supposed to be dead, and her eyes were blinking. And I said, even one time I put my hand over her eyes, she wouldn't blink. So that she messed that shot up. I was really bummed on that one.
I've seen you do this in so many films as well, like you said there. You're one of these actors where, especially when you're playing the bad guy, you don't need any lines. You can do it with a look. You've got one of those that if you give that look, the other character knows they're not going to mess with you.
I work a lot with my eyes, and they'll look right through you. And I remember Steve McQueen, don't worry about the line. Just have the important ones. Let everybody else have all that stuff. Just have the important ones. And he says, you got a great look, and you zero in with your eyes. It's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's I remember when I was doing Force of Darkness, I wanted to play the detective. And a producer director says, you're the only actor in Hollywood who knows and understands about demonic oppression and possession. So we want you to play the guy possessed by demons. And I saw, thanks a lot. But, in fact, one scene I did with this, he was supposed to be a psychiatrist, and he went to the director and said, is this guy an actor, or is he really from an insane asylum? He said, he's scaring me.
That's definitely you playing the part properly there. Then,
right? That was funny, you know.
And we've talked like Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly, you know, all the martial arts stuff. We haven't mentioned, you've been in two films with Chuck Norris as well.
Yeah, Eye for an Eye. We did that in San Francisco. And back when I did when the Asian guy, the big, he was like a world wrestler. So he grabs me by the throat. You're supposed to look like you're choking somebody. This guy grabs me and he's choking. I hit him in the chest and said, what the hell are you doing? You crazy or what? So I told the director, you better have somebody tell him what he needs to do. This is no wrestling contest. He followed me around all day. Oh, I'm sorry. And I'm going, and low down, I'm sorry. And he, you know, big tough guy. He was like tougher than that one in Goldfinger. Remember the?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's how he was. So, but that guy I played was like, what was that drug that they have for the Asian, where they smoked this big long pipe? Not heroin, but anyway.
I can picture the scene.
Yeah. But I had to be careful that when they were dragging and going with the car dragging, that my foot didn't get near the tire because it was pulled it right underneath. There's always tricks when you're doing stunts to be careful. And I had a cracked rib in Game of Death, and I had a cracked rib in the other one in Black Belt Jones. Other than that, I never got hurt. So I was really fortunate.
Wow, yeah, you were really fortunate. You know, going back to how we started this as well, you didn't get injured playing offense and defense in football too.
Oh, yeah, that's...
To get away with injuries doing that is something else.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, they see a lot of guys now with all the concussions because it's a brutal sport. I mean, some of those guys get hit and nailed. Like Roger Staubach, I remember he had about 15... 15 where he had concussions.
I think that's one of the main things now, isn't it? I know,
yes.
I forget his name. One of the young guys, I forget what team he was from. I think he's like only 24 and he's retired because he's had
For fear of what's going to happen, because some of those guys are like vegetables. And I've seen guys who did those hallucinatory drugs and they're not themselves anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, for what? To get high for a while.
Yeah. So was it just that short-term gain? And it's like,
yeah. I don't get invited to those parties. And I used to go to some really nice parties, and they said, don't bring that guy anymore. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't do drugs, and he talks about Jesus. It really makes us nervous. One other party I went to, and he says, what do you want to drink? I said, I'll have some ginger ale and cranberry juice mix, please. Yeah, but what do you want to drink? I just told you. But that's not a drink. What do you want to drink? I don't drink. Oh, you recovered alcoholic? I didn't say that. I never drank in my life. I'm not enough. You never drank. Everybody drinks. Well, I haven't. That was all I wanted was some cranberry juice and ginger ale.
That's crazy that they automatically assume, you know, that either a recovering alcoholic or you need something, you do want alcohol in it.
Yeah. I worked with somebody, Dan Aykroyd was really a nice guy, good actor, and just a lot of people. I remember I did a Mannix, that was my first big role on TV, and Mike Connors, super nice guy. And that was the first time I killed someone. I got a silencer, shot him right in the back. And walked away like nothing happened.
Oh, and then how many people after that have you killed? So many.
You know, I was doing, remember Chuck Connors?
Oh, I certainly do, right? Yeah.
His son, really nice guy. And he was going to come down to Skid Row and L.A. County Jail and play and sing, and he was very good. Well, he had that sleep apnea and had that surgery, and he died like a day later. Something happened bad. And so I did Joe Williamson, my manager, you know, super nice guy, and he's really, really good at what he does, and we're friends. And I don't use that term loosely. So Joe set it up for me to do the memorial for his son, Chuck's son. And so he introduced me. You got Hugh O'Brien, you got all those Western stars there. And so Joe said a lot of nice things about me. And then right as I'm coming, he says, come on up, Mel. While I'm coming up, then Joe says, yeah, and Mel killed over 100 people in the movies. And I said, thanks a lot, Joe. I'm ready to do a service. He's telling him I'm an ordained minister. He says, oh, yeah, Mel killed over 100 people.
I think it's so great, though, because you're a minister, and it's that juxtaposition between the real life you and the on-screen you. I love the difference between that, and that you're still ongoing with both. I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah, and I did a movie called Giants. Remember Them? That was like a remake of Them.
Oh, I remember Them, yeah.
Yeah, and but I helped save the world on that one. And in Power Elite, I played the President of the United States. So I didn't die in everyone, but just a lot of them I did. I enjoy playing the villains.
And we mentioned as well earlier, you've got so many films, you know, upcoming this year and into next year. Is this something then that you want to continue now that you're back keeping busy with the acting side? Do you want to continue
sure.
with that as well? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's good. I'm able to, like Leo Fong, he always works around my schedule. So that works out good. April 9th, I got a big day shooting for Runaway Killers. And then got one that big, big, big finale scene. And I'm finished with that. And I'm waiting for Greg to get that last scene that I have to do, which is really a good one. And then to go on to Syndicate Smasher. And I'm just a cold, you know, it's like I shoot this one guy, put five bullets in him, like no emotion at all.
I'm so looking forward to all of these films.
Yeah. So you ever get to California?
Unfortunately not. I've been to America a few times, but I've always been to the East Coast. It just ends up with that. I'm always there. And I'm hoping to get back there this summer, but again, it'll be the East Coast.
Yeah, we just, they had that huge, they had all kind of the karate actors and actresses in that that epic martial arts. It was like the Academy Award of Martial Arts. And Alan Goldberg, who runs it. And I stayed at the Tropicana in Atlantic City, a beautiful hotel. I mean, you need a 3A roadmap and a lunch to find where you're going. So it was good.
It sounds like you're having a good time at the moment, Mel. It sounds like
And I have a wonderful relationship with my daughters. One lives in Oregon, but I've been up there 14 times in the last five and a half years because I minister in Vancouver, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I stay with my daughter. They have a guest house I stay in, and I got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old grandkid that they love me to pieces. And then Elijah is 14. So it's good. You know, I do counseling. A lot of issues of life from the people's youth lingers on. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I learned to reach out and help. Right now I have several people that have terminal cancer, so I got to try to encourage, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then on a set too, I get people that come to me, and when they're struggling, so it works out.
That's good. It must be just so rewarding for you on all levels.
Yes, it really has been, and the fact that I should have died 6 times, and I've had 27 surgeries. I've got scars all over my body, but God's not concerned about my scars. It's what I did with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I got better. I did not get bitter, because bitterness is a poison. And this one inmate says, "How did your faith get so strong?" I says, "Through adversity." So it's, you know, it's amazing how you go through these things, and it's not easy.
But you've come out the other side every time as well, haven't
yeah,
you?
That's what people watch you. And so when they see that, then they see, hey, yeah, he just told me God doesn't show partiality. Maybe God can do it for me. Always to encourage, because discouragement is the devil's most worn out tool, and it's destructive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then people see the things I've gone through in life, and that I'm not, you know, bitter or living in a prison of unforgiveness. So that helps too when people see, they watch you like a hawk.
Talking about people watching you, Mel, how can the listeners to this follow what you're doing? Is there any way online that they can keep up to date with everything that you're doing?
Yes, if they go to www.melnovak, N like North, V like Victory, melnovak.com. That's my website. And you have testimonies in it, you have updates, you have all kind of things that I've done. You got scenes from movies, pictures, tons of pictures. So it's a good place to go. You get to know me better when you go to the website and you see what I do. I've been ministering on Skid Row. This coming Sunday, Easter Sunday, will be 33 years that I've ministered on Skid Row.
Oh, that's amazing.
And 29 years in prisons. And there's no paycheck. But God takes care of my needs, not my greeds. Philippians 4:19. And like you said, the reward when you see people, like I'm going to get this in the last scene in the Runaway Killers, my buddy Brady, I led him to the Lord in Pelican Bay, the worst penitentiary in the country. Got big tattoos on his arm and this super, you know, his testimony was in June. If you look at June testimonies of 2014, and when he sent that to me, I literally wept. When any inmate says, "I love you and respect you," that's it. They will do whatever it takes to help protect you, because I got to sign a paper if I'm taking the hostage. They don't make deals, and there's no deputies in there. It's me and the inmates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of. It's not easy. I just did 6 services in 4 days, and I was wiped out. I was wiped out because, you know, you're behind enemy lines, and you're in the devil's territory, and all this stuff, and it does drain. And I did a fight in the movie 3-4 years ago that I hit the concrete 7 times, and a disc jammed over 2 inches. Laying on a nerve. So when I'm standing and walking, I'm in brutal pain.
Yeah.
And I trashed my shoulder playing softball. So I have pain all the time. And
you make a difference though, Mel, in a lot of different ways to people's life with the work that you do, you know, being a minister with even as something just through the parts that you play in films, and fans like myself again look forward to the films that you do. So it's so good that you're making differences to people's lives in all sorts of ways.
Well, that's the real positive part of it. And not much love in the world, David, and you got to bring love to these people who've been rejected, abandoned, betrayed, abused, a lot of walking wounded, hurting people, wherever you go. I've been to different parts of the... Hey, I went back to Hong Kong. I don't know how many... Probably about maybe 8 years ago. And ministered there and in Taipei. You had a whole bunch of Buddhists came to hear Stick the Assassin, but they heard Mel the Preacher. A whole bunch of them, you know, gave their life to the Lord. And I went to Taipei, Taiwan. And it's amazing. It's, no matter where you go, people recognize you.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I'll be at the airport and they say, "I know you're an actor, but I don't know your name." And I'll go, "Well, that's okay. I don't know your name either. What's your name?" Or I'll say, "Well, Isaiah 45:3, God knows my name, but it's good, you know." And like I say, after that happened, there was 2 ways I could, when my career was gone, my scholarships were gone, everything was gone, there were 2 ways to go. Had I turned to drugs or alcohol, my life would have been destructive.
Yeah,
I probably wouldn't even be here. But God had a plan. And so it's a blessing. I've done, you know, probably 30 some starring, co-starring, and I've done other ones and meet a lot of good people, and just like a blessing.
Well, long may you continue to entertain us and to with your ministry work as well, Mel.
Oh, thank you, David. Yeah, I really, anytime you would like me, all you gotta do is let me know.
I'd like
me to be on your show. Yeah, because that was, hey, if you ever have anything in Wells, tell them, you know, get me a ticket, I'll come.
Oh, definitely. The door's always open here in Wales for you, Mel. Definitely.
Sure, because you never know. They have, you know, you have some, what they call from the States coming there, that you may have some big martial arts thing or whatever.
Yeah, we have a few filmed. In fact, there's a big movie convention that's about 10 minutes up the road from here. They have it twice a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we should get something sorted.
Sure. Just tell them you have a buddy from California. We're Steeler buddies.
Oh, yes.
Pittsburgh.
Let's keep our fingers crossed for this season.
Oh, made me sick when I lost that.
Oh,
So,
I'll be sending you
why
messages.
did I watch this? That's where I'm going. What
I
is the matter with you?
know. Of all the teams to get beat by, the Ravens, no.
Oh, the Ravens. I put the jinx on them all the way down till they lost, and I thought, good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for giving me your time, Mel. It's been lovely, and all being well, this won't be the only time that we get to chat as well.
Good. Yeah, love it, love it. And maybe next time you have more stories about what we're doing, so.
Yeah, with all the work that you've got upcoming, I'm sure we'll have to have you back and have an update on everything.
Oh,
That's a
yeah.
definite. Yeah, we will do.
Just let me know.
We will.
You take care, David. God bless you and all the people that listened.
Thank you, Mel. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye now. And once again, 60 minutes goes by in a flash. A huge thank you to Mel for joining me. It's always a pleasure when I get the chance to chat to people whose work I've admired for many, many years. Like I said, when I was talking to him, I think he first came to prominence with me when I watched Ultimate Warrior. And in the years between then and now, I've watched him so many times. And hopefully, from the sound of it, he's going to be so busy. There's a lot more new films to watch him in that'll be happening over the next few years, too. You can visit his website, like you said, which is melnovak.com. You can also visit our website, which is 60minuteswith.com. co.uk. On there, there's a contact us form should you wish to message us for any reason at all. We always like emails coming in. You can also email us direct, which is contact@60minuteswith.co.uk. You can follow us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/60minuteswith, and also follow us on Twitter, which is @60minuteswith. So this is it, another interview show gone. It's been so busy lately, and I'm looking forward to having Mel back on again, keeping us updated with everything that he's doing. We've mentioned quite a few films, one being Samurai Cop 2. We've mentioned that, as you probably well know, if you listen to 80s Picture House as well. So that's a big film that we're looking forward to, and all the others that he's doing. So all that remains to be said is, whoever you are, wherever you are, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with another show very soon.